Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of The Cosmic Circle, the official podcast of The Cosmic Circus, where we discuss all things nerdy. On today's episode, we will be breaking down the newest Sony animated Marvel film, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. My name is Brian Kitson, head writer at The Cosmic Circus, and joining me today is none other than Alex Perez, our resident spider expert. How are you doing today?
Howdy, everyone. I'm doing great. I've seen Spider-Verse about a collective 5 times now, because I literally just saw it again today.
5 times.
It's literally, the thing is, I know Lizzie's going to think like, oh, he's only seen it 4 times. I saw it 5 times because someone invited me last minute today. But it was good because I needed to see it again to kind of like get my thoughts in for the podcast, because there's a lot that we need to talk about.
Well, then let's jump right in. So obviously, spoiler warning to anybody listening, we will be discussing this film, breaking it down, talking about the future of the Sony animated universe and possibly the Sony Marvel universe as a whole. So Alex, I want to start with one of your tweets. Back on 3 days ago, June 1st, you said, in short, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is nothing short of a revolutionary animated experience. This is officially your favorite Spider-Man movie, Marvel movie, comic book movie, and one of your top 3 films forever. That is some bold claims. Do you still feel that way 5 times later? And if so, why do you think it's up there so high for you?
Everything, literally. First, let me just start by saying, yes, it's still up there. And literally, I'm almost tempted to say this is my favorite movie, had it not been for, like, because I'm debating it right now. Like, I know a lot of people are going to be like, oh, he's so uncultured. Like, to me, I've seen a lot of different films. My favorite film of all time for now, people, please don't argue with me. My favorite movie of all time as of late is The Godfather. Amazing. Okay. Movie. It was a movie I saw with my mother. And then the second one is what was his name? It was Scarface. Anyone see a pattern? Everyone just sees Al Pacino in the title. But no, it was just like, I love both of those films. But then, like, the third one was Avengers Infinity War. Like, that was the third one for me. And then just Across the Spider-Verse came in and just knocked it out of proportion, because I was like, damn, this film is, like, really good in all forms of senses. For me to classify a film, I have to classify it based on 3 things. The first is the story they're trying to present. The second is the cinematography. And third, the music.
Okay.
So for me, The Godfather and Scarface both had incredible stories. The cinematography in both of those films was wonderful. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to see either of them, Brian, but they're fantastic. And then, of course, the music was incredible, because who else can, like, remember the iconic Godfather theme, which is an Andy Williams song, like Speak Softly Love, and then the soundtrack also for Scarface. And Across the Spider-Verse, the thing with Infinity War was third, because it hit all notes with the story, it hit all notes with the visuals, and the soundtrack, it also hit well, but it wasn't necessarily something that's memorable to me. Across the Spider-Verse managed to hit all 3, and something that was phenomenal, there were moments I was looking at the film and I thought to myself, am I watching an animated film or am I watching something live action? Because there were moments where they were like transitioning between, like, you know, cuts, and then there were camera movements that I'm like, they're animating camera movements on screen, like when they're walking around, like, the building in New York, and Gwen walks upside down and the camera just tilts and it's just animated. And I was like, well, wait, this is a camera move, but they're doing it in animation. And they did that so many times in the film. I was just like, it blew my mind, which was kind of the reason why I loved it. Not only that, but, like, the final 20 minutes of the film, just visually, storytelling wise, and the music, that was like, I've had a lot of people have been listening to, like, Metro Boom's like Metro Boomin's album for like the soundtrack for Spider-Verse. I've been listening to Daniel Pemberton's soundtrack on replay, especially like across the Spider-Verse, the final song, which is like the Prowler theme and like Miles's theme and then Gwen's theme, and like so many different themes together, and that just like gets me so freaking pumped. And that's like one of the main reasons why I thought to myself, this film is just going insane. And I can't believe it even happened. I was like thinking to myself, this is going to be a very ambitious film for them to complete. And then it worried me when I saw people go and say, oh, like this film is incredible. This film is fantastic. It's literally one of the most amazing films of all time. And I got worried, because when people hype things up, that's when I get like, oh, I'm not going to like it. But thankfully, this is one of those few times where I'm like, thank God I agree with critics.
You know, it's funny because I feel like that's how I felt with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, where everybody hyped it up and I was disappointed. Granted, part of it is being the migraine problem, which is kind of stopping me from seeing this one. But the way you're hyping it up, I am 100% thinking I'm going to go and try to get through this movie. I'm probably going to have to sit down and finally finish the first one.
I highly recommend you do. There, like, I know what you mean, because I also had that issue at first. There were moments where I was like, and I was watching it also in IMAX, and the first time I saw Into the Spider-Verse, and the background of Miles's world 1610, which is where most of the film of the first film takes place, like the background kind of just like fades. It has like that 3D effect where you think you're like, and I thought to myself, damn, they're playing like a 3D movie. But they toned it down in this one, because they're not in 1610 all the time. 1610 is maybe in it for like 15 to 20 minutes of like the final portion of the first act. And then we have the rest of the different places, which is also something that I loved. I loved how different each and every single one of the universes looked like. And having this film start with Spider-Gwen's universe and the way it looked, the way it was watercolor, I was like, in using like the watercolor background to like describe emotions, that was insane. Though I will say, I loved that there was a moment, the first swing of the film is when Spider-Gwen's like swinging through New York, and the first swing is literally her colors from the first comic, like the first Spider-Gwen comic, where she's like blending into the background and all you can see is like the lining of her hood and her lenses and like her like spider eyes and then like the orange background. And I saw that, and I'm like, oh, they're quoting the comic. And they did that a lot. They did that a lot, which is another thing I wanted to mention now that we're on Spider-Gwen. And like, there's going to be a lot of Easter eggs that I noticed. Some I'm sure I missed some, but there was one I noticed with like Spider-Gwen's theme. There's like a guitar riff that goes, and it was really quick. And I was like, damn, this theme is familiar, but I couldn't place it right. And I was listening to it, and I noticed that it was the Spider-Man theme, the original Spider-Man theme, but it was like faster, and they cut some notes. Cause the original Spider-Man theme is, but then this one, they're like, it's the same progression, but shorter and played in an electric guitar. And I was like, oh my God, Daniel Pemberton, you genius. They hit Easter eggs in the score. They're hiding Easter eggs everywhere. This is why this movie was amazing. But that's just me.
Well, no, I'm so glad that you enjoyed it, because I feel like that's been the growing consensus, especially from the first one to this one, that everyone seems to be enjoying it. And with this story, it seems like it was a much bigger story. Not that the first one wasn't big, but it was, like you said, it was much more tailored to Miles Morales' world. And I'm going to kind of let you explain this one, but there's a reason why it's called Across the Spider-Verse, and it's because the multiverse kind of opens up for this character. What was the story like for you?
Okay, so I'm gonna dial it back. When you said that everyone, the consensus with everyone has been that that everyone has liked it, I can confirm to you, I've been talking, I've gone to the theater with different people from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Like I've gone with people from work. I've gone people that are Spider-Man fans, Spider-Man cosplayers. I've gone with every sort of, I've gone with movie critics as well to like to see this film. And everyone has a different opinion.
Okay.
And one of the opinions that a lot of people that kind of shocked me was the people that didn't like it the most were the people who were complaining that the film ends on a cliffhanger. The people that do not like this film the most are the people that are complaining that the film ends on a cliffhanger, which to be fair, that's to their extent. It's their right. They don't like it. That's fine. First, I do want to say the film, when we first broke the exclusive that was called Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, it was called Part One. We all remember that the film was going to be Part One and Part Two. I don't see how anyone thought this film wasn't going to end on some sort of cliffhanger and we were just going to get like a resolution. Either way, most films nowadays, like Marvel films especially, they end, if not on a cliffhanger, with like the post-credit scene. The thing is, they just didn't do the post-credit scene. They just put it straight up in the ending and that's it. There is no post-credit scene in this movie, by the way. So like, but it just ends on a cliffhanger and people were like saying, oh, but it ends on a cliffhanger. It doesn't have an actual ending. And this is where the part of it, usually when I bring up this point, this is where people go, oh, okay. Yeah, no, I see it. And they change their minds a little bit. And it's, you cannot look at this film as Miles's story. Because it isn't. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, but Miles is at the forefront. Miles is the one that Miles is the main character of this entire franchise. He's the one telling the story. He should be, you know, the main character. It isn't. The main character for me in this film throughout 100% Spider-Gwen. And I'm going to explain why. The film starts with her. The film starts with her narrating, monologuing to the audience, to whoever is listening to her about the events of the film. She's the one that gets the most screen time. I timed this out. She's the one that gets the most screen time out of all of this. She's the one that's informing people of the experience that's going on. And the film, the resolution of the film doesn't end with Miles because, you know, Miles, yes, his story ends open-ended, but Gwen's story kind of starts and ends in this movie. Like, she doesn't die, but she's like, the start of the film is like, she's a person who's always had an issue with like not fitting in, not being part of a band, always wanting to be part of a band, but it ends up being a solo act. And, you know, there's also the conflict with her dad because she unmasked and like her dad didn't accept her at first. And then by the end of the film, when she comes back to that Earth, she resolves the issue with her dad accepts her, and she decides to go out on this adventure and she builds her own team to rescue Miles. To me, she's the real like main character of the story. And putting that perspective of this is Gwen's story, setting up Miles's story for the next one, I feel like people would, with that mindset, would enjoy the film better than just saying, oh, this is a cliffhanger for Miles' story. You know, because, you know, not, that's the thing.
I was going to say, that kind of reminds me of the complaints that we heard about Mandalorian season 3, where people were upset because they wanted to be Mando's story. And it was actually, what's her name? I can't think of her name.
But Bo-Katan.
Bo-Katan's story. And so you're saying that if you look at it in the way that it's Gwen's story, you have a more feeling of resolution a little bit better.
Yeah, not only that, but you literally have. And in the first 10-15 minutes of the film are all dedicated to Gwen. Miles doesn't even come in until like 15 minutes later. Like, I remember yesterday we were watching the movie for the fourth time, and my friend, and like my here's the ironic thing, my friend was late. He arrived 15 minutes after the movie started, and he comes in just as Miles' story is about to start, and he still understood the entire thing. He didn't see like the first 15 minutes of Gwen in her world and fighting the Renaissance Vulture and 2099 coming in. And like, sure, it's helpful for them to understand that backstory because it provides them more. But people can miss the first 15 minutes and still be fine watching the movie. You know, that's kind of like, at least my friend was that way. Me personally, I can never do that. I have to sit through and through, watch an entire film from beginning to end, which is also another thing. I know that it was like, I was actually asked to leave the theater yesterday by the theater that I saw the movie at, because they were like, there's no post-credit scene. And I'm like, I don't care. I was looking for something particular in the credits because I needed to know more. Because here's trade secret, everyone. If you want to find out more about a story, or that, especially a story that involves the multiverse, always check the credits, always check who's writing the story, and always check who the script writers are consulting. Because guess who's in the credits credited during this film? Which is something that I wanted to talk about.
You want to talk about it now? You want to jump into it?
Yeah.
I'll
jump into it. Someone tweeted at me the image of like the Loki multiverse thing. I got to find the tweet. Hold on. It was here. I remember I saw it. All right. So someone tweeted at me and asked me, is it a okay. So this was me responding to, shout out Dwayne, Den of the Nerds. Like, he was talking about how Miguel cataloged the MCU as Earth 199999 blah, 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 blah. And I answered to him that at the end of the film, Gwen has her own watch, and it's a very blink and you'll miss it moment, which is why every time I go to see this movie, I try to see it in the biggest screen possible so that I can appreciate every single detail. And it's a blink and you'll miss it moment. But there's a moment when she's going to Peter B. Parker's Earth, which is Earth 616. It was told to us in Into the Spider-Verse that it was Earth 616. Now, of course, after that, you know, Multiverse of Madness came out and people said that, you know, the MCU was actually Earth 616. So it's a little bit confusing. No one really knows what Earth is. The MCU Earth 616 is the MCU Earth 1999, blah, 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 all that. In the film, which is why I say that they answer it and at the same time they kind of leave it up in the air. At the end of the film, at first they say flat out the MCU is Earth 199999. By the end, which is like a month after the events of like the first 15 minutes of when they say that, Gwen's watch, which is given to her by Spider-Punk, says, as she's traveling to Peter B. Parker's Earth, which was originally Earth 616 in the Into the Spider-Verse film, it says Earth 616-B. It's a variant of Earth 616, but it's not really Earth 616. It's just a variant. So it's very curious. And then someone responded to that saying, it's not a coincidence, right? That like unfolding scene, and shout out to them, it says, it's not a coincidence, right, that the way Miguel opens up about the web of spider people who are all connected looks exactly like this. And it's not, and it isn't a coincidence. And I'm going to explain why. And I'm going to confirm it here in the podcast, the question that everyone has been waiting for me to answer. Marvel and Sony were in communication for this reveal of the multiverse. I was told by two of my most reliable sources who have gotten things in the past that Marvel was consulted for this part of the multiverse, which is why we see the timeline. Yes, the sacred timeline from Loki and Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania showed up in Across the Spider-Verse when Miguel says this is everything. When he says this is everything and the timeline spreads out, that is the sacred timeline. Then he goes on to explain a variation of it, which is the web of life and destiny. And that's the same thing as the sacred timeline, but it's more focused on spider people. So the sacred timeline is everything, but within the sacred timeline, there's the web of life and destiny. So that's the first thing I wanted to mention. The second thing I wanted to mention was in terms of whether or not Across the Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse, is the Spider-Verse, is the Sony-verse, essentially all of the films Sony are making, are they canon to the MCU? Yes, they're all technically canon to the MCU in a way, shape, or form, because it's the multiverse. It happened. It just happened on another Earth, not Earth 616. Now, will the MCU ever reference these events? From what I understand, yes. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting. I know. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting. Understand, yes. Yes, it's a thing that's going to happen, people. And I get it. A lot of people are like confused with like, but how are they going to bring in, you know, animated characters and have them interact with live action characters? They already did. That's the first experiment that they did by bringing Prowler, live action Prowler, played by Donald Glover, in Across the Spider-Verse as he's in that prison, which, by the way, I can also confirm that is not a variant. It's not someone else. It is indeed the 616 MCU Prowler in there. Now I'm confused as to why he was there to begin with. But the ironic thing was, like, I was told that he was going to be a thing for Spider-Man 4 because they filmed him, and I was told that they were going to do it. I just didn't think to myself when they told me this that it was going to be for Across the Spider-Verse. I always thought it was going to be for the trilogy, which, because it was going to be like the next trilogy has to deal with like turf wars and stuff. But that's another thing. Spider-Man 4 and Spider-Man 5, and we're still years away. Well, not years away. We're 2 years away from that. But you know, it was going to be like street wars and turf wars and different gangs and stuff. And I thought to myself, oh, they're just testing his costume because, you know, it's going to be for Spider-Man 4. And I just immediately disregarded it. And then I see the live action thing and I'm like, oh, so this was what it was for. Okay. So, yeah, you know, like, I feel like they were just like teasing it. But yeah, I would expect like the MCU Prowler to, you know, show up in Spider-Man 4 or Spider-Man 5. Because the story kind of has to do with that. But yes, they showed the timeline because they're trying to connect the two films together, not just the Across the Spider-Verse, but Beyond the Spider-Verse as well, which is also something that we're going to talk about, because there was the one thing that was flooded between my DMs and my tweets and people mentioning me about why they didn't see Tom Holland in the film. Why wasn't Tom Holland there? You said he was going to be in the film. And I also said, which was confirmed by, we're going to talk about this. There were spider people that were cut, right? There were spider people that weren't in the film. And let's start with the first one, which was confirmed by Phil Lord himself that was going to be in the movie. And he didn't show up. Spider-Man, the Japanese Spider-Man, did not show up. Neither did his mecha sword, which I'm completely forgetting the name, when I know it starts with an L, but I don't want to butcher it. But he was supposed to be in Across the Spider-Verse and he was cut. So was Tom Holland. Tom Holland wasn't wearing the final suit from No Way Home. He was wearing the black and red suit with the white symbol on the back. So I knew it was him, but he wasn't, it for some reason, it wasn't there. And there are other characters which were cut, which I'm going to assume are going to be in the film. There's hold on, I have a list right here of characters. I can say them right now. Hold on. And these are fine because my source told me permission to do it. So, but you know, I didn't see Man Spider there. Cyborg Spider Woman was a thing, but like they didn't reveal what she was doing in that one for some reason. There was a Spider-Man that was actually gonna be that was going to reference Nick Fury, because it was the Spider-Man with a S.H.I.E.L.D. logo on his shoulder. And it was like Spider-Man Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., not related to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., people. Calm down. I know like a lot of people are just immediately going to question Chloe Bennett.
You're going to get everybody riled up.
There was a spider assassin that was essentially like a hitman version of Spider-Man. You know, there's a lot of... There were the clones. Okay, let's talk about this. Kane, you know, the other Scarlet Spider, Kane, he was going to be in this movie. And he wasn't, and he didn't show up. He wasn't there. Same thing with the Spider-Woman clone, also didn't show up. And part of the reason why these characters did not show up is because they're being saved for the next one. You know, there's also there was one that was literally teased in posters, shown everywhere, and I don't recall ever seeing her in the film, which was Spinneret, which is a Mary Jane version of Spider-Man with Mayday, like older Mayday. Like, yeah, we had the young Mayday, which was Peter B. Parker's daughter, but I didn't see an older Mayday there, you know? There's a lot of characters that did not make the final cut of this film, which to me is like, it's because I know they're saving them for the next one, which I've been told it's going to be longer, but it's difficult for me to picture how they're going to make Across the Spider-Verse longer than 2 hours, because while you do have animation, you know, for adults, and like the biggest fan base right now for Spider-Man is adults, the target demographic for this is still kids and families, you know, films that families can see. And I don't know how they're going to make this next film longer than 2 hours, because I think Into the Spider-Verse was shorter. I don't remember. Into the Spider-Verse was 1 hour and 40 minutes. Across the Spider-Verse was 2 hours. And I'm being told that they want to make Beyond the Spider-Verse like even longer than that, like 2 hours and 30 minutes or something like that. And I'm like, I don't think you're going to have enough attention span from like kids to sit around for 2 hours and watch this movie. Sure. A lot of spider people, right? Just to keep it, wrap it up. Spider people were cut. Spider people will show up in the next one. And the experiment with Prowler and Andrew Garfield, who also showed up in this movie in a like archive footage version of him from Tazum 1. It was a test. It's a test to see how people reacted to, you know, live action and animated versions together. Because potential spoiler for the next film, I suppose, they're going to be traveling to a live action universe. I don't know which one's going to be it. I don't know if it's going to be the MCU. I don't know if it's going to be Tazum. I don't know if it's going to be Raimi. It could be all three. It could be none of them, because we could see live action Miles Morales, since that's now a thing. But, you know, Beyond the Spider-Verse is going to get live action, because we're gonna go, as the title says, Beyond the Spider-Verse, and that, unfortunately, I can't mention what they're gonna do beyond that, but I'm just excited for it overall, because like, we're now in the hype of the multiverse saga with Marvel, and it's gonna be hype.
So are you saying then that when they go over to these worlds, kind of like Prowler, they'll remain animated in those worlds, or will they become live action when they cross over? Can you say that?
They're gonna stay animated. Like, I know that I know there's people that are questioning, like, oh, what, like, is, if Miles Morales goes to an end to a live action universe, are we gonna get a live action Miles Morales? I don't think so, because that's kind of like the experiment that they were doing with Across the Spider-Verse. You have Donald Glover in a live action Donald Glover in an animated setting. And it worked. Why can't you have an animated character in a live action setting? I mean, just look at, and this isn't something that's new. This is stuff that's happened for years, and people have Space Jam, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, bro.
Yeah.
This is not something that like that's new, but it's going to be great because it's Spider-Man. And I know that it's going to be fine, and people are not going to be taken out of the immersion at all. So I'm sure it's going to be fine. But yeah, it's going to be great.
You know, going back to something else you said too, and maybe I'm looking too deep into this. Maybe you can answer this, maybe you can't. But you had mentioned the fact that this film references the Web of Destiny. Isn't that tied to Madam Web? And is that going to play a part in the film?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a rumor.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you a rumor that I heard. And I this one is from a source that has gotten things right in the past, especially when it comes to Sony things, but has also gotten things wrong. So take this one with a grain of salt. This one I don't say with a lot of confidence. There was an idea before these films were all delayed and pushed back even further. There was an idea that Madam Web, I don't recall how old this was, but it was going to be that Madam Web was going to come out before the animated films. and that they were going to reference the events of Madame Web into Across the Spider-Verse, which is why you see an animated Julia Carpenter, which is supposed to be played by Sydney Sweeney, I think is her name, the actress from Euphoria. That's supposed to be her, but I don't know exactly how that's going to happen now, because Across the Spider-Verse came out beforehand, and that's also a thing. This is a thing where Sony's having issues with like their release schedules, because Morbius was supposed to come out before No Way Home, and that the events of that film were supposed to intertwine with No Way Home, but then No Way Home came out first, and then came out Morbius, and you know, situations happened, right. And now it's just a mess. So now I'm scared that they're just going to try to jam in Madame Web when at this point, keep them out of it. But from what I've heard, there is a way they can do it right. There is a way that they might be able to do it properly. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I would hopefully the idea works. Okay. What I heard, I don't know if this is going to be final. I don't know if this is even final, but we'll see how it happens. Someone visits them that's related to Across the Spider-Verse at the end. That's all I'm going to say. I don't know who it is. I don't even know if it's going to happen. I think Sony does want to connect these universes. I personally don't want them connected at all. But from what I understand, there is a chance that someone from Across the Spider-Verse is going to show up at the end of Madame Web to kind of like connect these stories together. But we'll see how that happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that gives us a really, you know, interesting possibility for the future of Sony's universe, but also for Across the Spider-Verse. With the way that this film ends, which I'm going to try not to butcher this too much, so correct me if I'm wrong, it ends with Miles getting stuck in a world that's not his own, kind of trapped there, kind of for the result of his own consequences for what he's done trying to save his father. Where do you want this to go? Where does it go? Like, obviously it's going to be to save Miles, but you know, you mentioned the time frame of not going to go too much over 2 hours, hopefully. Where do you see this film going?
Okay. I know a lot of people are seeing this film and they're thinking, okay, we're in Earth 42, Uncle Aaron is alive, Miles' dad, Jefferson, is dead, and Rio's a single mom. And the spider that bit Miles is from this Earth. That's also a thing. So they kind of mentioned that the Spot, who is an incredible villain, by the way. I'm going to talk about Phil Lord and Christopher Miller near the end. So remind me about that.
Sure.
But the Spot what they do is like they explain that the spider that bit Miles into the Spider-Verse came from Earth 42. And because that spider was taken from Earth 42, that Earth has no Spider-Man. So every single Spider-Man villain is now running rampant in New York. They're littered everywhere. I wrote down every single reference I could find. I had to see it 5 times just to get all of these characters. And I know that there's more. There's the Electro, you know. Vulture Corp, obviously referencing Vulture. The Sandman, that was hilarious because I didn't notice it until like the fourth one. I thought to myself, that's just an ugly Rolex. And then I see Sandman and I'm like, oh, okay, I get it.
That's funny.
So yeah, it's a Rolex watch and it's called Sandman because time's running out. Ooh. Scorpo, which was, I love how Lizzie wrote to me and said, were you trying to say Scorpio? And I'm like, no, I know, trust me, I saw it too, and I was having a spasm inside. I'm like, grammar, but it's called Scorpio, you know, for scorpion. There was one that was an eight, And then like in the background, it was too fast for me to see, but I know it was an 8 and it had like an OCT, like octopus, like Dr. Octopus plus the 8, you know, 8 arms. An octopus has 8 arms. So Doc Ock, the Rhino Casino, which was an RR logo. There was a sign that said Hammer. And I thought to myself, okay, Hammerhead, you know, because there's no way they're going to mention Justin Hammer and Hammer Industries in the Spider-Man movie. But Hammerhead, you know, there was a sign that was an S and had like shockwaves. So Shocker, you know, they're referencing every single villain in this universe. I have yet to see Mysterio. I have yet to see Kingpin. And probably something that's interesting to me is I don't recall seeing a single reference to Green Goblin in this movie. And there's no Norman Osborn in this. And I don't know if they're like trying to keep him hidden for this film, or like they don't want to talk about Norman Osborn because like Norman is Peter's nemesis. So there's no need to bring in Green Goblin, which is fine. Honestly, I personally love it. But yeah, I know that they're setting up the Sinister Six cartel, and you know, and it's possible that the Sinister Six, well, it just has those members, like the ones I mentioned, Electro, Vulture, Sandman, Scorpion, Doc Ock, Rhino. They're all kind of like the main members. The only ones that I noticed, that I didn't really notice, like on Earth 42, and hopefully I'm wrong, I might have to see it again to see if I noticed them, but I didn't see any reference to Kraven or Mysterio. Even though like they're referenced in the film, like during like the capturing sequence, and there's like an interesting Raven, Mysterio, Mysterio. So yeah, there's different versions, but I didn't see them on Earth 42. So I don't know if they're gonna keep like the main roster, the original roster for the Sinister Six, or if they're gonna change it up, you know. But it's fine. What I do think though is that at the end, you know, there's the big twist reveal that Miles is Prowler. And okay. I know that a lot of, like, the Miles of Earth 42 is Prowler. And that's also another thing, short Easter egg, if you didn't notice it, when Spot is explaining that the spider was from Earth 42 and he snatched it out of Earth 42, there's a sequence when you see the spider be snatched. But the spider, when he snatched, before he snatched, he's on a school desk with about to bite a kid with braids, who is Miles Morales from Earth 42, because it's the exact same braids and haircut. So on Earth 42, the spider that was going to bit Miles, in that bit our Miles, was the one that was going to bite the Prowler Miles. But because it didn't bite him, all of this happened, you know? And I know that a lot of people are thinking to themselves, all right, so we have, you know, now we have Prowler Miles. He's going to be the bad guy 100%. And I don't think that's the case. I genuinely don't think that Miles is the Prowler Miles is going to be the bad guy. Something in my gut is telling me no, because the same thing happened with the first one. Into the Spider-Verse ended with the reveal that Miguel O'Hara was going to travel the multiverse. And we all thought Miguel O'Hara was a good guy. And look how that happened. I'm getting the feeling that we're getting expectation subversion, and that like Miles isn't really the Prowler Miles isn't really a bad guy. He's just trying to fend for himself and his family as best he can against the Sinister Six cartel. That's what I think they might be going for, or at least that's the way I would see it. But in the end, I'm just excited to see it. I know that we're gonna get, you know, we're gonna get the Sinister Six cartel fighting off against the team formed by Spider-Gwen, and it's gonna be an awesome matchup, I think. Because you have 6 villainous characters, and then you have Spider-Gwen, you have Peter B. Parker, you have Penny Parker, you have Spider-Noir, you have Spider-Ham, you have Hobby Brown, the best character, you have Spider-Man India, Pautier, and you have Spider-Bite. So you have 8 spider people aside from Miles, which makes it 9 spider people versus the Sinister Six Cartel, potentially Hammerhead and Shocker and Prowler. You have 9 villains versus 9 spider people. You see, it's like it matches up. But
it's the perfect matchup.
Exactly. But and then there's the point about Spot, which I have to commend Christopher Miller and Phil Lord, and also Dave, I don't remember his last name, but the other writer, Dave Callahan, I hope that's his name. If he listens to this, I'm sorry for butchering your name. But I have to commend them for making what people have called for years the lamest Spider-Man villain into what is arguably the most dangerous villain in the multiverse to date, only second to Kang. That is incredible. Really? That is the most incredible story. Do you have any idea how much of a genius you have to be to take one of the lamest Spider-Man characters and make them into this one of the second most dangerous multiverse villains aside from Kang? That is insane. Which is one of the reasons why I'm thinking to myself, and going back to the thing about the credits, and the film as across the Spider-Verse, which is why I stay there, they thank Jeff Loveness, the writer for Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. They thank him. And I've also heard that while he wasn't credited, they talked to Michael Waldron about this. They talked to Michael Waldron about the multiverse. And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking to myself, okay, think about I don't want to say for certain this is going to happen, but think about this for a minute. Jeff Loveness was consulted for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. From what I understand, he was consulted for jokes and he was consulted for his idea on the sacred timeline. But Jeff Loveness, the former writer for Avengers, the Kang Dynasty, works on Spider-Verse, and I'm sure that must have been like a while ago, but he works on Spider-Verse, and you know, recently he left the project. Would you imagine anyone better, once the writer's strike is done, by the way, support the writers, pay them what they deserve, get them their rights, or support the writers' rights, please. But would you imagine once the writer's strike is over, if it ever ends, when they get into the room, you know, now with Jeff Loveness not in the room, I would get first person on my mind to get into Avengers Kang Dynasty, get Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, because that like what they did for this movie is just insane, and they need their opportunity in the MCU. I would 100% be on board with them following Spider-Man Beyond the Spider-Verse. Get these people into the MCU, get them writing the multiverse with Michael Waldron, and let's actually do this right, because Secret Wars and Kang Dynasty, it's something that needs to be done right. And and Phil Lord and Christopher Miller did it right. What they presented with Hammer Space, the canon, like, literally taking the term canon and making it a thing, you know, that's, I was like, that is genius. Get these people into an MCU writing room right now and let them write the multiverse saga. I'm down for that 100%. Like, that is genius. But speaking about that, going back to like the Spot, I'm actually kind of scared because I had an idea about this, and I've noticed that Phil Lord and Christopher Miller like to reference things that happened in the, like, they like to foreshadow things. They like to foreshadow the events of the future films in their films, in like in future films and current films. And I noticed while watching Across the Spider-Verse, and they show the future. Essentially, they show a canon event, which is that supposedly in the film, like in Beyond the Spider-Verse, we're going to see Jeff Morales die. We're going to see Miles's dad die the day of when he's sworn in as police captain, because that's a canon event for all Spider-People, that apparently if you have a captain in your family or you're close to a police captain, then that captain dies. Most of the captains have always been George Stacy, which is Gwen Stacy's dad. And they were kind of doing the exact same thing here for like Gwen's dad and her on her Earth. But he quit the police force. So it kind of shows that like a canon event can be disrupted. And at the same time, nothing bad is going to happen. Like it doesn't need to happen in order for a canon event to exist, which is also something I'm going to talk about. Like I said, this podcast is going to run for a very long time because there's a lot to talk about. But yeah, I had a horrible idea that I saw, and it was at first it was a joke line, but I kept seeing the scene over and over of the future where Jeff is gonna die, and I thought to myself, this would be a horrible idea and it'd be heart-wrenching to see. But they foreshadowed it as well in the film, which was that there was a sequence when like Miles is going, can't you just be a normal supervillain? And like he's glitching out, and like it's just some quick cut frames as jokes where like Miles is in very different poses with the spot, and like he's traveling around in different spots. And then there's a moment where like Miles is inside the spot as if the spot was where, like as if Miles was wearing the spot. And I kept looking at it because like Miles sees this future. He sees this not once, but twice. He sees the future of Jeff dying. First time when Spot connects with the collider and says, that's our future. And that's what's going to happen. But the thing is, you never see Miles during that future sequence. And in that moment, I thought to myself, what if Miles tries to save his dad by going after the Spot, only for the Spot to absorb him, and the Spot, and like Miles as the Spot is the one that causes the accident that kills his own dad. And I was thinking of, and the thing was, I was like thinking to myself, that can't happen. That, like at that same moment, I was like, that can't happen. They wouldn't dare do that. But as you're seeing the scene, you see that the Spot kind of like glitches out, and there's two heads. Like one's trying to get out of the Spot's body as he's like glitching out and destroying the building that kills Jeff. And I'm thinking to myself, bro, what if Miles is inside the Spot and he's the one that causes the accident? Like that would be so messed up. And I was like, damn. So I that's something that I think could happen in Beyond the Spider-Verse. And I'm terrified and I hope it doesn't happen, but I feel like it's something that could happen.
That would be hard for a lot of fans to watch that. I don't know if they're ready. For that.
You think? No, I mean it was kind of, no, but it was horrible. Like this film was hard to watch at some moments because you know it was hard to watch the like the final moments when Miguel is telling Miles that he was an anomaly, that he was a mistake. Because the spider that bit him wasn't supposed to bite him. And he's like, you're a mistake and such. And that was like a very tough scene. And it was even worse when it's revealed that all of Miles's friends knew, like Peter B. Parker knew, Gwen knew, and they didn't tell him. And that's why they never visited Miles, because he was the original anomaly for Miguel. But that was something that was kind of like difficult for me to watch, because I'm like, damn, that's, talk about not accepting someone. But this is the one bit that I have to mention it, and I have to say it, and again about the foreshadowing, and they like to foreshadow things in these movies for the future. I don't trust Lila. I don't like the algorithm that's with Miguel. I don't trust her at all. I really don't. Like I don't understand how an omniscient computer that sees Miles, knows what's going on because she's always with Miguel, and she saw that, like, and she's connected to the web. She's essentially Ultron, and it's the future. She knows what's going on, how she let Miles get away into Earth 42, unless it was intended. You know, because there's a scene where, like, Miles beats all the spider people, and he goes back to the Spider Society HQ so that he can travel, go, so he can get into the machine that would take him back home. Except when they analyze his DNA, they analyze the DNA of the spider that bit him, which was from Earth 42, and it sent him to Earth 42. And at that moment, like while that's all that is going on, Spider Bite, which is like a techie Spider-Man, that's very cool character, by the way. She had a very short time frame, but she was very cool. And she was like a very techie Spider-Man, and she was in charge of the homecoming machine, and she was trying to delay, like she was trying to stop the machine from working. And at the end, you know, she kind of like just says, she sees that it's Miles, and she kind of had a little bit of a connection with him during the film. Very short, but it was like a small connection. And she's like, he's trying to do the right thing. And Miguel tells her to turn off the machine, and she says no. And like, she just doesn't react. She just looks at Miles and she goes, nah, I'm not gonna press the button to like stop the machine. But before that, you know, like Lila comes in to try to help Spider Bite, and she keeps saying, oh, what if you do this? Or what if you do this? Or what if you do that? And she tells her, stop it, you're getting in the way. And I'm thinking to myself, was Lila intentionally letting this happen so that Miles would go to Earth 42? Did she know what was going to happen? Is she like the real villain behind this? And that was like, these are the questions that go on in my head while watching a Marvel movie, and I can never enjoy them because I'm always just questioning everything.
So you think there's a chance the ultimate villain's going to be Layla?
Yes, I don't trust her. I don't trust the algorithm thing that's with Miguel. Because there's also that thing of like, I don't think Miguel is a bad guy. Because at first, like when we first see Miguel in like Into the Spider-Verse, he's a really cool spider character. And then there's like a very stark difference with him in this one. And I'm starting to think that it's because of the algorithm. Like something is up with Lila. And I know that Lila is like a very close friend to him in the comics, and like they have their ups and downs and stuff. But I don't know. I don't trust the algorithm. And this is probably one of those things where I'm wrong, but like something in my gut is telling me something, like my spider sense is going off with Layla. I don't like her. I don't like this Lila character at all. She's very weird. And even Miles questions her, like, and we're like, Miles questions her at some point and goes like, we're supposed to let our friends and family die because some algorithm tells us to. Do you realize how messed up that is? And I'm like, I keep looking at it and I'm like, damn, he has a point. Like they keep putting Layla in the forefront as if she's like the mastermind behind this, but I don't know. Like I could be wrong, but at the same time, like something tells me there's more to Layla and 2099 by default, which is also something like this is a crackhead theory. It's not confirmed. This is just my own personal headcanon. I wouldn't, because they're both the same orangey holographic color. They both have to do with the multiverse. They both are informational. They know everything that has to do with the multiverse. I would lose my mind if in Beyond the Spider-Verse, Lila turns out to be Miss Minutes. I would literally just lose my shit. I'd be like, I'm done. I'm out. This is not, it's like,
that'd be it for you.
That would be it. And at the same time, I could believe it because Lila knows about the sacred timeline and she acts in the exact same way that Miss Minutes would. And she even has the same coloring. Bro, that's a crackhead theory. I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be like the most insane way to connect Beyond the Spider-Verse to, like, because that's a thing. I have heard from my sources, confirmation here. I've heard from my sources, they're gonna bring in some Spider-Verse characters, not all. I don't know which ones they are. I'm going to assume Miles Morales, but they're gonna bring Spider-Verse characters in for Secret Wars, which is, and this is also part of the reason why someone asked me this on Twitter and I didn't answer them right away because I thought it would be right for me to answer it here. Yes, there is conversations about making Secret Wars a two-parter, and not just making Secret Wars a two-parter, but having a Battle World phase, like a phase that's just dedicated to alternate universe projects. And like between one film and the other, because there's just so much Marvel wants to do with the multiverse, with cameos, with other projects, with other universes, that we are not going to have enough time for us to get a concise story between with all of these characters in just Secret Wars, because Kang Dynasty doesn't even delve into the multiverse variants. It just goes with like the MCU characters and it deals with the Kang, with the different Kangs, but we don't get any MCU variants. We don't get Spider-Verse variants. We don't get Daredevil variants, or not confirming that there's Daredevil variants in the works or anything. I'm just like shooting off the top of my head, but there's no variants of the characters that we know. We just get the 616 MCU characters in Kang Dynasty, and then somehow we're supposed to delve into Secret Wars and have these MCU characters interact with their own variants from different universes. Some are new, some are old, some are characters that people have known for years, others are just fun variations of the characters that are just gonna show up. And we're somehow supposed to do this in one movie? There's no way. There's literally no way. And I've heard that they're gonna divide Secret Wars into two things, and that there's a potential idea to make an entire phase dedicated to like a Battle World thing where they just go into different universes and like make it a very big version of What If. But like it's so early, and the bad thing about it is I can't even give you an updated version of this because this is old information that I can't update you on until the writer's strike is done, because until the writers at this moment essentially control the playing field with everything, because they control productions, because they can go to strike, they can do strikes, they can go to rallies, and they can pause production and delay productions. Pre-production wise, all the stories are stopped. They can't do anything because they can't write, because writers can't write. And it's a very complicated situation where literally everything has been paused until, you know, the writer's strike is done. And like these ideas can't be fully developed until the writer's strike is completed. So the people that have to be in charge of these conversations, I'm literally sidelining this. I'm literally sidelining a Spider-Verse conversation to talk about the writer's strike. But, you know, give these people what they want. You know, they are the people responsible for making these productions work, not just directors. They are the people that make these stories work. And when they are treated with love and care and appreciation and given the things that they are asked and they deserve, you can get things as amazing as Across the Spider-Verse, you know, and it's an amazing story. And you just have to, trust these writers, and you have to, you know, you have to commend them for the work that they do. But that's a different point. And I completely lost the point that you had asked me earlier.
It's okay. That'd be super exciting to think of a Battle World phase. That's my personal favorite series of comic books, is all of the Battle World issues in between. So if we could get that and bring some of these into the Spider-Verse characters in there, I'd totally be down for it. That's what we need. We need more integration in all these characters. Give it to us, but also pay the writers. Absolutely.
Yes.
Without the writers, we have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you feel like we haven't covered that you want to say or you need to say about this film?
There's a lot of things that I need to say about. I'm literally, as we're speaking, I'm rewatching the movie in my head, and I'm going from beginning to end, scanning everything, because I don't write notes. I just remember. I'm gonna put some things that I need, and I hope Phil Lord and Christopher Miller and all the people in charge of these films answers in Beyond the Spider-Verse, because I need to know the answer to this. In the beginning sequence, in the first 15 minutes of the film, Miguel O'Hara travels to Spider-Gwen's Earth to take down the Renaissance vulture or whatever. But while you're looking at the watch, you can see the recent Earths that he had visited before that. I want Phil Lord and Christopher Miller to explain to me what Miguel O'Hara was doing in Miles Morales' universe on Earth 1610 before Across the Spider-Verse happened. What was he doing? I want to know. That's the first thing I want to know. Second thing I want to know, why did he visit? I mean, this one kind of answers itself, but before 1610, he had visited Earth, I think it was 198. I don't remember the exact number, but I know it was Earth. It was Hobby Brown's Earth. It was Spider-Punk's Earth, which is probably to recruit him, probably recruiting him for the Spider Society. But I want to know what was up with that. I want to know exactly why Miguel O'Hara visited Earth 1610. The second thing I want to talk about is the turnabout cannons that Miguel O'Hara used to kind of describe how every single character, every single Spider-Man has to go through these events, and it's supposed to happen to all of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a moment when they're showing the canon events, they're showing different iconic moments of Spider-Man. They're showing Spider-Punk leaving the iconic classic suit behind as he walks away from the alley, you know, and he leaves like the Spider-Man suit in the trash can on the right-hand side, and he like Spider-Man walks away on the left. There's Spider-Woman, Issa Rae Spider-Woman. By the way, Jessica Drew Spider-Woman, amazing, loved her. I loved her at first, and then just midway through the film, it was like she became an antagonistic character I did not like. And I was like, girl, come on, don't do this. Don't be like this. You're human too. But she kind of turned it around at the end by letting Gwen do her own thing, which I really appreciated. But they were showing different things that every canon character has done in Spider Comics. And there was a sequence that we saw with Spider-Gwen, but it was not shown. And I need to know if what we saw is the future, because if it's the future, I am not prepared to see Spider-Gwen die, because there's a sequence when Spider-Gwen is looking at a mirror about a canon event, and we see a very beaten up Spider-Gwen, like costume torn and everything. And I have tried to look around everywhere for that comic book panel, and I have not found it anywhere, but the pose is very reminiscent of when the night Gwen Stacy died. And I am terrified that Beyond the Spider-Verse is going to kill Spider-Gwen, because I fell in love with this character way too much, and I am not ready for her to die in this movie. So I'm not ready. So I'm hopefully someone who's listening to this podcast will be able to find that panel for me and know what I'm talking about. And hopefully will tell me, no, that's not from that. That's from like another sequence. But I hope she doesn't die. Because the thing is, we only see her, like, her body slumped, her costume torn, and she's, like, in the Spider-Gwen costume, but we don't see who's holding her. And I'm thinking to myself, are we literally about, did they just tease Gwen's death in the third film? And I'm like, I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready to see this. But
it kind of makes sense, too. That. This was kind of her story. You know, maybe her story ends in a very permanent way.
They're not going to do that for a kid's movie. They're not gonna kill this character in a kids movie. Okay, Disney, well, to be fair,
Disney kills film kills people all the time.
Bambi's mom, but I'm not ready. I'm just not ready for that. I'm not ready to see Gwen die, because I mean, and that's also a thing they kind of teased it when they said Spider-Gwen, and like in every universe, Gwen Stacy falls for Spider-Man, and in every other universe, it doesn't end well. So I'm thinking, are they gonna literally kill her in the next one? That's something that I need an answer to.
Okay.
What was the other thing? I need to know Miguel's story. I need to know more about like what's going on with him. Why is he injecting himself with? I feel like I remember 29. I know that I've read 2099 story before as a kid when Edge of Time came out, but that was like 2013. It's been 10 years, literally 10 years since I've read about 2099. And I feel like I know that the way that he has his spider powers is different from Miles. It's not a spider bite. I feel like it's the injection that because he injects himself in this movie. And he says, I used to be the one and only Spider-Man of 928, or at least I was, you know. So I'm like, I want to know more about what's up with Miguel, why he's calm at some moments and then just immediately goes feral in other moments. You know, like something's up with him and I need to know what it is.
Spider-roid rage?
Spider-roid rage, most likely, yeah. But apart from that, I need to know what are the other variants that are going to show up in Beyond the Spider-Verse, because I know there's a lot of characters that they cut. And I, like I mentioned before, and I hope that they bring them in for the next one. This is something I want. And I know that a lot of people this is not something people were thinking about when they saw this movie. I need a song with Gwen and Hobby Brown. I need it because it's criminal to me, not only them, but Miles too. It's criminal to me that you have three spider characters who are musically talented. You have Miles Morales, who brings in his hip hop beats and mixtape stylings that he knows how to do because his uncle Aaron taught him. You have Gwen Stacy, who's a drummer. You have Spider-Punk, who's the guitarist. And you don't, and if I want them, I want for Beyond the Spider-Verse to just have them make a song, because I know Hailee Steinfeld can sing, all right? We've all seen Pitch Perfect. We know she can sing. So absolutely. I want a song on that soundtrack with Hailee and Spider-Punk. I want Spider-Gwen, Spider-Punk. Give us that collab for the soundtrack. We need a song. And what was the other thing? And lastly, the last thing that I'm going to say, which is something I noticed, this is the first Sony film I have ever seen to end like a Marvel movie. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. Hopefully someone can like debunk me on this and immediately say, no, this happened before. But I don't remember a Sony movie ever ending like Marvel would, where they would put, you know, like whenever we see a Marvel movie, like they would put, for example, the legendary Star-Lord will return, or Spider-Man will return, or Captain America will return, or Kang will return. This is the first time I've ever seen Sony end the movie with Spider-Man or Miles Morales will return. I don't remember ever seeing that. And I think to myself, this is an MCU thing. Are they literally saving Tom Holland and an MCU appearance again for this? Like, that's what I'm thinking, but I don't know if that's what they meant to do by that. So I don't know, but that's all I got to say for now. I'm probably sure that I'm missing stuff, but like that's like the most that I wanted to get out of my chest. Cause like, that's literally been bugging me for like the past 3 days while I've been watching this movie. And I've been like, this needs to go on the podcast.
I'm so glad we got this opportunity, and I know it's slightly different because it's just the two of us, but yeah. I think you're going to give them lots of things to talk about, and I'm sure that they're going to have even more questions to ask you on Twitter.
I'm going to quickly skim through my Twitter to my tweets about Spider-Verse and see if there's anything here. Oh yeah, we were going to talk about the poll. I'm disappointed in people. And first and foremost, yes, I know Spider-Gwen has an animated spinoff coming. That's fine. I just like added her in because she was one of the new characters that showed up. But I put which character from Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse would you like to get a spinoff project of? And in the poll, which currently has 746 votes, which is wild to me, Spider-Woman is leading with 31%. 2099 is in the second place with 29%. Then Spider-Punk has 27% and Pavtir has 13%. First off, I'm disappointed that Pavtir does not have that many points. I like him. I liked his personality. He was incredible. Hobby Brown, listen, I have my favorite Spider-Man character of all time is Scarlet Spider. I'm not going to get into it. But Hobby Brown, Spider-Punk, was literally my favorite character in this movie. There were lines when he is such an instigator, and I loved him for it. He was like, like Miles was arguing with all the spider people, and he said, "Don't call me a kid." And then Spider-Punk goes, "Damn right." And then Spider-Woman goes, "Hobby, you're not helping." And he goes, "Good." And I'm like, "Yes, my favorite instigator of all time." So I want a Spider-Punk project. I need more of him. I think Daniel Kaluuya has been perfect casting for that character. So that was great. Let me see. Someone asked me about good characters from Across the Spider-Verse crossover during Secret Wars. Yes, I already answered that. People are just asking when the podcast will drop. So it'll drop at some point. People are just asking where the... someone wrote Madam Web has to capitalize off this perfect setup. We've already discussed how Madam Web is going to tie into this, if it does at all. So we'll see how that goes. Someone wrote about add something about the Scarlet Witch too. This is not a Scarlet Witch podcast.
That'll come later.
That'll come later. I'm sorry, Bestie. I know you're excited about Wanda, and all I can say right now, just really quick, I'm sorry, Lizzie's probably gonna be like, cut this out anyway. But just really quick, Wanda's coming. Just relax. You know, you're gonna get a lot of Wanda references, and it's gonna be a while because it's just mainly gonna be referencing Wanda. It's not really gonna be like, oh, Wanda's back for in this project or in this other project. They're just gonna reference her a lot. You know, there's Deadpool, there's Agatha. They're gonna reference her. It's not necessarily gonna be a mention, but they're gonna mention her, and she's still alive. And I'm just gonna ask you guys to wait until Agatha comes out so you can find out more in detail about what's gonna happen. But that's it. I don't have any other questions about Spider-Verse here. I don't see anyone asking me anything. So yeah, that's about it.
Well then, I guess with that, we've reached the end of our conversation here on the Cosmic Circus official podcast, The Cosmic Circle. Check us out on thecosmiccircus.com, or you can find us on Twitter and other social medias at My Cosmic Circus, and The Cosmic Circus podcast Twitter at Cosmic Podcasts. Thank you again so much for tuning into The Cosmic Circle. I'm Brian Kitson, and you can find me on Twitter at Kitson301. Before I let you go, Alex, where can the people find you? They already know where you are, but let them know just in case they don't.
So I'm barely on social media, but you can find me on my articles at The Cosmic Circus, or you can find me on Twitter at Alex from CC. I'm not going to promise that I'll answer to your tweets because I get so many, but yeah, I'm on there on social media. So you guys can just catch up whenever I update there. So yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. You guys are amazing. And I'm sorry for the incredible rant.
It's okay. They're all going to love it. They're going to listen to every second of it. Thank you again, listeners. I cannot wait for our next trip through the cosmos.